Hey everyone, this is Mark Dolan at Time Tested Mastery. I'm excited to spend some time today with Tyler Wood. Welcome, Tyler. I have been watching, you know, you for a long time. You have a commitment to personal development, and you know, you seem to have a plan and a drive to live life the fullest and get the most out of it. You know, can you share a little bit about that path and, you know, some of the areas that you've gone with that?
Yeah. So again, it goes back to the start with my dad. You know, when he's always been a motivator, right? He was always encouraging me. You know, he used to send me little motivational things when I was in high school. When I was on the basketball team, he and John Brisson would send me. He'd have John create this some kind of graphic thing. You know, before there was computer, you know, graphics and stuff. And John, being the artist that he was, would. He'd send me little motivational things when I was playing basketball. And so he's always been, you know, the one that was my mentor from a, you know, mindset discipline kind of standpoint. And so I remember when we first got started, I think he gave us the Jim Rohn, like the Art of Leadership, I think it was, or the Art of Discipline. I can't remember the name of it, but it's that book, along with the audio tapes, you know, kind of started the whole self-improvement in my head. And again, I believed everything that my dad told me, you know, and he's like, listen to this stuff. And so I listened to it and I started to do some of the stuff as far as, you know, journaling and writing my goals and kind of picturing where I wanted my life to be. So I started this young and I've seen it work. And so it, you know, there's no doubt in my mind, you know, what works for me. And so I've just taken that mindset of, you know, self-discipline and goal setting and all this stuff and applied it to everything that I do, because that's the recipe for success for me. So starting off at the very, when I was younger, seeing that and seeing how it worked, it's just moved into, okay, what do I want to do now, you know, in my life, now that I have two kids and I'm 50 years old, and it's like, what do I want the next part of my life to look like? And so, you know, as I slowed down on the real estate side of things, family became, you know, the most important thing to me. That's the number one thing to me now.
Right.
That's where my mind is. That's what my intention is to. Everything I do now runs through this filter in my mind of like, okay, well, how is this going to affect how I get to hang with my family or hang out with my family, right? Like, oh, it would be nice to go do this, you know, for a job, or, you know, I wouldn't mind coaching a team, but it's like, am I going to be able to spend the time with the kids that I want to spend? Like, so everything runs through that filter in my mind. And so, but the self-discipline part and the mental part of it, I think it just started when it's just a foundation of who I am. I just learned early on, you know, kind of what worked for me. And I've just stuck to that plan from the very beginning. You know, there were some things, that I went through in high school that the hard work part of it, the discipline part of it really got set in. One of them was, playing basketball. You know, I wasn't the greatest basketball player. I was a good athlete, but I didn't really play that basketball that well. So ninth grade, I went to try out and the coach wouldn't let me try out because the team was selected or I hadn't made the summer team or whatever. Either way, I wasn't allowed to play. And I always used to be like the last guy picked. And so these are things I remember, you know, about that experience. So I just started practicing. I just started playing. We had a hoop in our front yard and I just continuously practiced and I started to get better. I started to, you know, go to the open gyms and I would play better. And I just saw the growth happening. And I'm like, wow, this stuff actually works. I'm getting better as I'm practicing more. So I just continuously practice. And I would just, I mean, I spent a lot of time shooting hoops. And so eventually, you know, I made the sophomore team. I made the JV team. I, you know, ended up doing really pretty well in high school. I was, you know, whatever. The point is, and the coach even mentioned, you know, my senior year, like we cut him the first year and now he's, you know, where he is. And so it showed me that if I just worked hard continuously, you know, with not a lot of, you know, not messing around, just getting out there and doing it, that I could get better. And it showed me that I could do apply that to a lot of things. And then, so that's basketball. And then with math, I was not a good math student. I didn't really understand it. It frustrated me. And fortunately I had a stepfather who did understand math and would sit with me at the kitchen table, you know, and just, I would cry and I would just get mad at him and I would just beat my head for, I just do not understand this stuff. And then one day it just clicked and I saw it and I was like, wow, that I understand it now. And then I just took off in math. And so I, again, applying the same, it was kind of at the same time, that, you know, if you don't understand something, if you're not good at something, you just got to work your butt off to do it. And you will. And I, you know, not quitting, right. Not quitting, not stopping, keeping moving forward. And then you'll see the results, right? Most of us, my dad always said, most of us quit before we see the results. And, you know, when it gets hard or when it gets uncomfortable, most people will quit. And so, I didn't know at the time, but I pushed through and I saw the results later. And then, so those things, I think back, I hadn't thought about that a lot until recently, like, why am I the way that I am? It's even before my dad, it was those experiences, that showed me that if I worked really hard, I could overcome the lack of skill, and the lack of smarts maybe. Yeah. But you have to put the work in. And so that's what started it for me. And then I had already known that going into the real estate world. But, you know, and so, you know, the whole Jim Rohn and all that stuff would put it all kind of, it put it more in understandable terms. But I'd learned those lessons early from my high school kind of career, math and basketball.
Yeah. Well, and I think Jim Rohn is the guy that stood out for me the most. And I think I probably heard him, you know, right about the same time you did, or a little, you know, that way that he speaks and the way that he talks, and he's got this up and down kind of voice kind of thing going on. I mean, I can remember quotes from him because, I mean, the first time I heard them, they stuck with me. You know, work harder on yourself than you do on your job, and things like that. You know, you shared something that I think is important, and I read something early on from a speaker that talked about real estate agents. You know, they'll get into the business and they don't realize how long it takes. You know, we don't get paid on day one for what we do on day one. We probably get paid. I mean, I made my first paycheck 6 months after I started in real estate. So I had to work for 6 months before I received a paycheck. Most people won't tolerate that. You know, most people will quit long before. And I remember the story of an agent that had worked, and she probably worked 3 or 4 months, and she was, you know, working in a neighborhood when they knocked on doors at the time. And she had done all of this work paving the way, and she didn't get success, so she left the business. And her broker gets a call 2 months after she quits from somebody in the neighborhood saying, "Hey, where is this gal? You know, we want to sell her house, or I've got some referrals for her, I've got this and that." And she had quit, you know, before the miracle happened. And you learned that before you got into real estate, that you can do the work.
Yeah, I mean, it's very prevalent in real estate, right? I mean, people will they'll send out mailers, right? Or they'll call, or they'll do whatever they're doing. And my dad used to say, don't do anything that you're not willing to commit 2 years to, right? Because that's how long it's going to take to see the results. I don't know if it's 2 years, he used to throw numbers out, but it does. The fact is you're not going to see immediate improvement. But if you continue to grind and you continue to do stuff, stuff will start to happen. It's just a matter of time. And that's just some people, they either don't have the finances to be able to do it, or they just don't have the mindset to do it. I'm always reminded of that photo of a guy digging for gold, right? And he's like, you know, that far away, there's like a big gold pot behind this wall, and he stops, right? And it's right there behind the wall, right? And so I just I've always kind of kept that in my mind. And it's also a good point of like, hey, don't even start something unless you're really committed to do it. You know, if you're not really committed to doing it, don't even start it, because we know how it's going to end, right? You have to be committed to doing it. But I think that game plan if you're committed to do it, if you put your head down and you really work hard towards doing it, and you know that it's going to happen at some point, if you have that kind of a mindset, I think that'll serve you well in anything that you do, not just real estate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to me, the magic number is 18 months. If your dad says 2 years, it's close enough. I mean, you got to work a long time before you can be assured that you're going to see the kind of results that you want. Another thing that we talked about a little bit was, we're talking about mindset. You got that before you got into real estate. One of the things I remember is your dad had a shirt at one time. This is back in the Coldwell Banker years, and it was No Fear. There was a brand out there. It was called No Fear. N-O-F-E-A-R. That was the brand. And it was sort of popular. I can't remember, what group was doing it. But your dad had a shirt that said No Fear, K-N-O-W. And his premise was that if you're uncomfortable, that means you're growing. And I know that you have a history with that concept. Can you share that with our people today?
Yeah. So, it didn't really come clear to me until in the last few years. I read a book called Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter. It's a great book. And it just talks about how the modern conveniences of life, everybody wants to try to be comfortable, right? Like, hey, you want to have a comfy bed and have AC on and the heater on and whatever. You want to be comfortable. And the point of it is that, with anything in life, there's dichotomies, right? You can have too much of a good thing, right? And we're almost getting too comfortable to where it's hampering our growth, right? If you're not uncomfortable, if you're not in discomfort, you're not growing, right? You're not changing, right? And we think we always want it. We want to be comfortable. We want to be happy, quote unquote happy, right? But that's not doing us good long term, right? And so my belief is that if you want to be happy, you have to be in search of discomfort, right? Think about the times that you've done anything in life that you're most proud of. It's generally something that was difficult that you pushed through, right? It's not the easy stuff. You don't even remember the easy stuff. Jim Rohn talks about, you set a goal, not for the goal itself, but the person you have to become to get that goal, right? It's the process, right? You hear about the process. The journey is the destination. That's all about discomfort, right? People that run the marathon, when you get to the marathon at the end, you're kind of bummed because it's over, right? So the growth comes from discomfort. And I believe being happy ultimately is being happy or content is when you're constantly overcoming obstacles and pushing through. If we're looking for the easy life, I think that's a life that will lead to unhappiness, right? I ultimately think we as humans need to seek out or to be involved in something that's causing us a little bit of discomfort so that we can thrive. You see some of this stuff out there now about Ozempic, right? And AI, right? We've talked about that before. And as a whole, I think, yeah, there's dichotomies to it, but anything that creates a shortcut to something, you have to I think you have to be skeptical a little bit of it, right? Obviously, you want to do things. You don't want to bang your head against the wall if there's an easier way to do it. But if something creates discomfort and you don't want to do it, and you just want to do the shortcut, that's probably a problem on you versus the thing, right? I think you get more pride and pleasure out of doing it the harder way, because that just causes growth, right? So from a purely a mindset deal, I have an issue with some of the stuff that you can just take this pill or you can just do this shot and you're going to be healthy. I don't think it's that simple, right? I mean, you may be able to lose weight on Ozempic. You may be able to do some of this stuff, and ultimately it may help with some things, but it's not getting into here, which I think is what a lot of it has to do with, is mindset, right? mindset, right? Pushing through barriers does more for your mindset than any pill or injection or anything like that can do. And same with AI. I mean, there's things that AI can help you do, but I think there's value in having the struggle to figure out how to do something, right? Like if I wanted to figure out a math problem, I could do it right now with AI. But the lessons I learned in life, struggling on how to do the math, are what created my whole lifestyle, right? And so I think people are missing a vital part of self-development and growth and mindset by taking shortcuts, right? I think and it's not just if you take a shortcut in this, it's going to be a shortcut in a lot of stuff. And I just don't think you're going to have the contentedness or pleasure or happiness that you get by putting in this, getting into the struggle, hitting it head on. I really think that's where a lot of people kind of might be having a tough time, because they're not leaning into that discomfort enough.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. I want to say the dignity of man or mankind comes because of the character and the person that we become. Jim Rohn has that great quote. He says, you've attracted the people, the places, the circumstances into your life by the person you've become. And when I first heard that, I was not in a good place in my life, and I was not real happy to hear it because he was basically saying, you brought it on yourself. But the good news is that if I become something different, I can attract much better into my life. And I think that's the message that you're sharing, is that, take the extra step, make sure that you grow, because there's something that's going to come to you as a result of it that brings the happiness that you're after.
Yeah. The person you become in the process is the ultimate goal, is the ultimate present, right? You can throw the money away. If you have a goal to make $1 million, if you make $1 million, throw the money away, because the person that you've become is the person that will attract all that stuff, right? And I don't think a lot of people understand how that works. They think it's like, once I get $1 million, I'm going to be happy. But when this happens, I will be, that never works. It never works, right? It's the person that you become throughout all this. So I personally, and that's the other part of what I'm doing right now, is I'm seeking discomfort, right? Because I know it keeps my mind right. And I just think that makes it easier. It makes life easier, right? So like if we seek out discomfort, if we take a cold shower, right, when we don't want to, if we go for a hike when we don't want to, we do the exercises. That's one of the greatest benefits of exercise, is doing something hard, right? And how you feel, right? If you do these things, it just makes life a lot easier. So I purposely seek out discomfort because I know how valuable it is for the rest of my life.
Are there any other thinkers that you've listened to in the last year or two that really have meant something to you?
Yeah, I mean, around the COVID timeframe, right? Everybody had a chance to kind of reevaluate stuff. I really got into reading then, right? I took a speed reading course because I wanted to read books. It's always been something I've kind of did, but didn't really have the time to do. So obviously during COVID, we had a lot more time on our hands. And so I started reading quite a bit. And then once you start reading, you just start, it opens the door to so many other books, right? I mean, you read about something in a book, you buy another book, you read this. And so, or you start getting references and things. So, Jim Rohn was the original, not the original, but he was one of the early Stoic, right, writers, right? I mean, the Stoicism right now, Stoic writers are very popular. But Jim Rohn, when you look at a lot of Jim Rohn stuff, it was all, Stoicism, right? Take control of what you can control, right? It's the ownership is on you, right? That's a Stoic kind of philosophy. But I started reading Ryan Holiday. Right. Ryan Holiday is a Stoic writer. He wrote The Obstacle is the Way. Ego is the Enemy. Stillness is the Key. Those were some of the books I read early on. He's since written some other ones. Discipline is Destiny. So there's some good books written by him. And then from there, I really like the message that Jocko Willink puts out. Right. Jocko Willink is the Navy SEAL that wrote extreme ownership, right? Extreme ownership, and just talks about discipline and kind of how discipline works. And so I've enjoyed his, you know, his books and or his teachings. There's a lot of other authors out there. I mean, I read a lot of different stuff. I try to keep it mixed. I enjoy health, reading about health and wellness. I enjoy reading about history, you know, but I think most of the stuff I like to read has to do with about personal development and health, right? Keeping yourself healthy. That's kind of the space that I like to read about.
Okay, very good. So this is going to be a little bit about out of order. I had written this question down and I didn't get to ask it, is that, you know, one of the things, you know, working alongside of you, you know, or in the same community with you for quite a while, you know, one of the issues that came up in our marketplace was a customer service question. And, you know, the experience that we have, and probably the entire real estate world is probably still going through, is the idea of the local real estate professional versus the, I have a real estate license, I can sell anywhere, people selling outside of their area of expertise. And the specific issue comes down to a statewide MLS. And we've always had a local MLS in our hometown, and there's been a statewide MLS that's been competing. And one of the things that was a theme over all of our discussions over the years when this issue would come up, is that you would say, it's what my clients want. It's what's best for my client. It's not what's best for me. It's not what's best for the industry. It's what's best for my clients. And so can you share where that philosophy, or what made that so strong in the business decisions that you made?
Yeah, I mean, so thinking back, mid 2000s, right, was when I think a lot of this was kind of, I know the statewide MLS, right, was a big talk then, and Zillow got into the business, and everybody said, oh, Zillow's going to take us out of the business. And so I remember that being a concern. I just always thought about it like, what's best for me is not always going to be best for my client. And the way, when I thought about it that way, it just was like, I can understand that we want to try to, I just feel if we try to block what's best for the consumer, eventually it's going to bite us in the butt. Right. And so, and I believe this now with a lot of stuff that's going on in the government right now, right? I mean, a lot of what we're seeing pushback wise is from people that were trying to stop what consumers want, right? I mean, you could be a taxi cab driver and say that, yeah, you know, you shouldn't be able to do something like Uber, but they still are going to do Uber, right? And so I think, as you know, it can not be beneficial for you personally. But that still doesn't mean it doesn't need to happen. And so what I saw was just like, I'm just going to be looking out for my clients. And I think if I'm looking out for my clients, that's going to be ultimately a win for me, right? Is that's the way I kind of looked at it. I think people that are not looking out for their clients, you know, and they had their reasons. I remember people were saying that, oh, agents from out of the area don't know the area. It's going to be a potential conflict, or it's going to be an issue for my seller if the agent doesn't know what they're talking about. I mean, I think to a small degree, yeah, I think a lot of it was masked as that, but really they just didn't want the competition, I think is what it came down to. But again, it wasn't in my mind having the property exposed to as many people as possible, as many buyers and agents as possible, was a benefit to the seller that would get them potentially the most money. And that's what our job is to do, right? Is to get them the most money. Obviously you don't want to put them in a conflict or some kind of issue, but that's what you're there for, right? You're there to, you might have to do a little more work and educate that agent, or, just double check and make sure that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. But ultimately, our job is to get the seller the most money from whoever wants to buy it. and not putting the property in the other MLS or not cooperating with other agents doesn't help that happen. And so I think just, you know, in my mind, it just was clear, like, what's best for the customer. And I just felt like if I was looking only at myself, that would come back to bite me somehow, you know, and I just, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if we were looking out for ourselves, it would be like, I have a team, everybody should come to me and my team, and that would be best for me. But I think the thing that you said, I think is key, is that if I'm taking care of my customers, and this thought came in my mind as you were saying that, is that you'll never have a shortage of customers. And you haven't had a shortage of customers with your business plan.
Yeah. And I think it's just being honest, right? I mean, I think it's being honest. I think that's what it kind of comes down to, is like, just be honest. Like, what's the motivation here? Are you worried about your job? Are you worried about, like, you not having money? I mean, let's be honest. Okay, we can have an honest conversation on that. You know, I think that's what consumers appreciate. You know, consumers appreciate when people aren't baloney and, you know, telling them a story. And they can see it, right? They can see it. Consumers can tell when somebody's telling them the truth or when somebody's BSing them. And I think it just falls in line. That's just the way I've tried to always do my business. I mean, you know, they used to say about my dad, you might not like what he has to hear, but he'll tell you what his opinion is, right? He'll give you his honest opinion. And a lot of people won't. A lot of people will just look, they'll read the script and they'll say, you know, everything's great. And it's not, you know, and people know that. And it's like, so I think, it just goes back to, like, in personal integrity. And I've just felt like I try to speak up when I feel a certain way, and sometimes it's right and sometimes it's wrong. And in this situation, I don't know that it was right or wrong. I just think it was just, I was looking out for what, it just made sense to me that, you know, representing the customer was our job. And that our job is to, you know, take care of our customers, buyers and sellers. So whatever we can do that, we don't want to shoot our seller in the foot, you know, by keeping it out of the MLS of a cooperating MLS or another MLS. Didn't seem to help the seller.
Well, we're not going to succeed by trying to stop progress. And as we've seen over the last 10 or 15 years, a lot of things have changed and gone to, you know, the recent NAR settlement, you know, really transparency. And that was what you were talking about, is, you know, be honest, you know, tell them the truth and then let the customer make the decision. And I think that's what the NAR settlement is all about. And that's what, you know, the statewide MLS is about, is let's get the information out there and let's rely on our professionalism, you know, not the information that is available to everyone. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Our values is not in the information. It's what does that information mean, right? I mean, that's just like anything. I mean, you can pretty much find anything you want now online, but diving through it all and understanding what it all means is what we pay for, right?
Yep. So as we get ready to wrap up, you know, I want to probably talk about what you really want to talk about the most, which is your family, you know, and your kids. I know that Dax is out there, you know, he is a skeet champion now, I guess, or at least he's wanting to be a skeet champion. So, you know, tell me what it's like with your family now, and, you know, and how you've transformed yourself into doing those things that your heart was calling you to do with your family, because you worked to get here. So tell everybody what it's like now.
Yeah, I mean, it is good to see my life kind of roll out the way that I wanted it to, you know, and the way my dad wanted it to. You know, I realized that to some degree I was on autopilot for a long time. And, you know, I was working and working and working and working, and it's like, okay, at what point do you, like, and I think this is a good lesson for people that are still in the business, that have been in the business a long time, you know, unless you really love what you do, right? And you really want to keep doing it. Like, why are we still doing it? Right. Or why can't we do something different? Right. A lot of people have regrets, right? The five regrets of the dying, and working too much is one of them, right? Not spending enough time with family, not spending enough time with friends, worrying about stuff that don't matter. You know, my life could have definitely gone a different trajectory. I'm thankful that it kind of went the way that I wanted it to go, but I just didn't know exactly how it was going to transition. But being, you know, again, a few years back, I decided, like, I want to be the dad who makes my kids breakfast. I want to be the dad who walks his kids to the school bus, right? And I know that's not something that everybody can do, but that's what drove me for a long time to have the money and do that stuff. Is like you said, the money provides you the opportunity to do the things that you want to do, right? And so I was real clear that that's what I wanted to be. And I wanted, you know, I wanted to be present for my wife. I wanted to be present for my kids. And so that's the intention that I've had. And that's what I started around COVID timeframe. I started getting real clear, like, this is my intention. So what do I need to do to make that happen? And so, you know, it's, you know, now it's just a job for me, right? It's being a dad. That's like a job. Like, I want to be the best dad I can be. What is the best dad, you know, and best husband? What do those, what do best husbands do? And what do best dads do? Right. You know, they try to teach their kids, and they try to, you know, they help them with their homework, right? And they read them bedtime stories, and they put them to sleep, and they help, you know, they help around the house, and they, you know, what, so that's what I'm trying to focus on. You know, go into the, my son, he shoots, sporting clays and skeet and trap and, with shotguns. Right. And so it's pretty crazy seeing all these kids with guns, you know, just out there doing it. Like, you don't see that too often. It's kind of frowned upon, I guess, but, you know, it's just good old fashioned fun. Right. And so he does that. He also plays baseball. And so, you know, seeing him, and I'm trying to push some of the things I've learned onto him. I don't know that it's the right thing necessarily, because he's still 15 years old, you know, but I try to teach them, you know, that control what you can control. Right. And really all you can control is your attitude and your effort, right? That's all you really can control, but have a good attitude, you know, be kind and try your best. That's all I ask. I don't need him to get all A's. I just need him to try his best. And when he doesn't try his best, I let him know, and we try it again sometimes. And so we're going through that. And then I have a 7-year-old, my daughter, and she's great. You know, she's just got a personality to her, and she does jiu-jitsu, you know, rolling around on the mats with the boys. She loves playing soccer. She's artistic. She's great. And I just try to be in the present moment with them. You know, it's easier said than done. And I couldn't do that necessarily as much when I was working as hard as I was, because, you know, like you said, when you're in real estate, you always got to be by your phone a lot. And so it is tough to be present. You don't want to lose out on deals and things like that. Having a team helps. But I've been fortunate to be in the position that I'm in, to be able to spend, you know, most of my mindset time on my kids, and my wife, and my, you know, my family. So, I guess I'm just grateful. I'm grateful for that. I know I worked hard, you know, I worked hard for it. I'm grateful for, my dad for setting me on this path. You know, he wanted me to be in the position that I'm in, you know, and, I think he'd be proud for sure of where I am. And so for now, it's family. You know, once my kids get older, who knows where it's going to go from there. I plan to live for a while.
That's a good thing.
You know, and stay healthy. And, you know, I'm in for the long game. You know, I look at things in a longer range kind of deal. I'm not thinking about short term, other than what I need to get done, you know, on a daily basis to support my long range kind of goal. And that's kind of what gets me going. I'm still selling real estate, just not to the degree that I was, and still running my team. And my goal now is for them to just be able to take on majority of it and let them kind of see where it takes them.
Very good. Very good. Well, I appreciate your time today, sharing, you know, sort of a back down memory lane for me a little bit. You know, your dad was an inspiration to me, and I know that, those were big shoes to fill. But now, you know, 26 years later, you know, Tyler, you know, you have made and created the life that you want. And it's been really good to watch that, you know, on the sidelines watching you do that. So I want to say thank you for sharing those things with us today, and wish you the best, and want to hear what you plan to do next.
Next.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think just get my kids through, my son will be is in high school. So, get him through that. Right. And then from there, we'll just kind of see how it goes. But at this point, I'm just really focused on health. You know, what my why, you know, everybody talks about their why, right? My why is my kids, you know, and I have a passion right now for health. I really like what, you know, the MAHA movement is about, right? This make America healthy again. I believe that the way that our system is set up in America, the healthcare, which I think is a sick care system, is set up, is just mind-boggling and backwards. And there's a lot of people that are unhealthy in our country for the wrong reasons. And I think that, so that gets me excited a little bit. I don't know if that's going to take me anywhere, but, you know, my health journey has taught me that, we know as individuals, we know a lot more about our health, than we think we do. And there's a lot of history out there that shows what being healthy is about. And so it inspires me right now to potentially, you know, get into that health space, from the way insurance is done, which is backwards and mind-boggling, big pharma, all the medicines and drugs and all this stuff that's being pushed our way. And then the food system, right? The way that our food is processed. I mean, I think knowing what I've gone through, and the road I was on, that, you know, you don't need a bunch of drugs to be healthy. And the food that you eat is the number one thing that will create good health. And, you know, just the insurance, you know, I think insurance, health insurance, you know, that is where my mind is a little bit these days. We'll see if that takes it anywhere, but, you know, health and wellness is kind of where I am now. And I, you know, hopefully that'll keep my goal is to live to see my daughter's 60th birthday. So I'll be 103 at that point. Yeah. And not only 103, but also my brain. I want my brain to be intact. So I'm doing things today for 103.
Very good. Very good. Well, it sounds to me like some role in public health policy is in your future. That's what I'm hearing.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah,
we'll see.
Again, it's going to have to run through the, all right, how much do I want to spend on this mentally? Is it going to take away from my kids? And right now, my kids are the number one thing.
Well, yeah, that could be a 10-year down the road kind of project for you. So you're still a young man at 50, let me tell you.
There you go.
All right, Tyler, I appreciate your time today.